My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This is AI Inside, episode 11, recorded Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. OpenAI and Microsoft's $100 billion Stargate supercomputer. This episode of AI Inside is made possible by our wonderful patrons at patreon.com/AI Inside Show. If you like what you hear, head on over and support us directly, and thank you for making independent podcasting possible. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of AI Inside, hopefully your weekly source for, you know, what's going on in the world of AI, from news, sometimes interviews. Had an amazing interview last week with Sal Khan. Really, each and every week, we have the opportunity to kind of look at a different aspect of artificial intelligence and learn all about it. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Howell, also joined by my co-host on this show each and every week, Jeff Jarvis. Good to see you, Jeff.
Hello, boss. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. You were busy earlier this morning, sort of related to the show. We're not going to talk about it, but tell us a little bit about what you were watching or participating.
So Meta was having an update on a fascinating project they've done with Stanford, with the Deliberative Democracy Project there, where in four countries they went to a deliberative democracy. Is really interesting because people are made to read, to first they get surveyed on their attitudes, then they're forced to read, they agree to read a bunch of background information about something, and then I think there's discussion, and then afterwards you see how their attitudes have or have not changed. And they have a whole bunch of questions about AI and Meta's governance of that, and they wanted to get people's attitudes about what mattered to them most. And I haven't dug through it all yet, and it's a lot. It was Brazil, Spain, U.S., and Germany. You could guess that Germany was more conservative about many things. But one thing that comes out very clearly is that if people are not told that they're dealing with AI, they're bonkers. They're not happy. But when they are, it has an impact. But there's some things they still don't like, and even if you tell me, I don't want to do that. Like, you really shouldn't use this for romance. That's kind of creepy. Other interesting things where they talked about it. So the data itself is interesting. I got to spend some time to dig into it. And then the question is, and this was the questions in the brief time, only 15 minutes of questions people had, is how actually Meta is going to use this in their governance. But it's an interesting model to look at. And so I'm glad they're doing it. One can like or dislike Meta, the oversight board, one can respect or not. But they do experiments like this, which are interesting. So I'll see. We'll talk about it in a future episode.
Yeah, and some of their efforts, when it comes to AI, have been more open than what we're seeing from a lot of other companies. So at least there's that too.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, we can definitely look back on that. Maybe next week, take a look back once we've had a little bit of time to digest and stuff. When you said, you know, things AI, you know, probably shouldn't be used for, and you mentioned romance. One of the things that came up for me was law. And we're going to actually talk about that a little bit later in the show, too, because this keeps happening where AI is used in certain ways to advise around laws and stuff like that. And maybe it's not the right tool for that, at least not at this point. Maybe eventually, but right now it keeps.
It's bad enough to put AI with facts, but yeah. Being wrong about facts that can have you go to jail or lose
money? Exactly. Facts with really consequences, bad. Like really, really big consequences. Maybe not a good idea.
Yeah.
So yes, we will talk a little bit about that in a bit because we do have some news to talk about real quick. Again, thank you for everyone giving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And you know what? If you're not reviewing it, you know what also really helps? Just letting people know. Tell people about AI Inside. Here's one thing I've noticed real quick before we get into things. I've been doing technology podcasting for almost 20 years now between CNET and
Grandpa.
And I've done a lot of content around technology over the years. And I would say in my personal life, like friends that surround me and everything, the content that I've done up until now hasn't been nearly as interesting to the normal people, the people who aren't so enthralled by technology that they just have to, you know, listen to podcasts on a regular basis about it. The normal people around me are very interested in learning more about AI. And so when they find out that I'm doing an AI podcast, these are people that I'm used to them just being like, oh, yeah, he's a podcaster. Okay. Anyway, so, you know, let's go out to dinner or whatever. You know, like they haven't cared before. And now suddenly they're like, oh, I'm listening to your podcast. I'm learning a lot about AI. So it's just it's interesting for me because it's different. I'm not used to that. I'm used to people kind of to a certain degree ignoring it a little bit in my personal life.
If you're nice enough to mention this in social media, tag us and we will gladly and gratefully and egotistically repost, retweet whatever you say, and including criticism, including you know, wishes of things you want us to do differently.
Absolutely.
By all means, we'd love to be part of the conversation.
100%. So just look for Jeff Jarvis and I online and then AI Inside Show. And then, of course, yes, you can support us directly via Patreon, patreon.com/AI Inside Show. That is the way where, you know, you can put a few dollars behind your support. And that goes to allowing this show to exist, essentially. You know, we do have some costs with the show, and we would love to grow this. So patreon.com/AI Inside Show, you do get some perks, you get some bonus stuffs depending on the level, definitely ad free versions of the show if that matters to you. And you also get to be called out at the beginning of the episode.
So who's going to be called out this week, Jason?
The winner this week of the call out is Crystal. Crystal, I just have Crystal's first name, but thank you, Crystal, for supporting us.
Thank you, Crystal.
I believe still we're kind of in day one signups. There were a lot of people that moved over when we first launched the show. So, Crystal, thank you for supporting us and enabling us to bring you AI Inside each and every week. Okay. How quickly time flies, Jeff, because just 1 year ago, the Future of Life Institute released its Pause AI letter. And actually, when I read this today, I was like, really? It's already been a year since this happened, since everybody was like freaking out about the fact that this letter, you know, co-signed by Elon Musk, Wozniak, whole bunch of names, basically saying we need to halt the development of AI systems for 6 months to, I think, enable kind of safety and
they were never clear about what they wanted to do in that 6 months.
Yeah.
It's just, this is danger, danger, Will Robinson. Stop now before it's too late.
Things are moving too quickly for our comfort, and we want things to slow down for some reason. And I mean, you know, to a certain degree, the some reason has, you know, often has to do with funding. I'm sure the Future of Life Institute, you know, a big part of their credo has to do with the existence of humanity into the future. But there's a lot of money riding on the line, and that's kind of why we're discussing this today. Friend of the show, Nurit Weiss-Blatt, who was on episode 3, by the way, to talk all about a lot of these topics, specifically the Future of Life Institute, did write about basically, so yeah, what happened right now is essentially a year ago, was it a year ago? There was an undisclosed $665 million donation from Vitalik Buterin, who's the co-founder of Ethereum cryptocurrency. He's actually donated this money in the form of Shiba Inu coins to the Future of Life Institute, I think a year ago, if I'm not mistaken. And this was news that prior to, you know, this coming out in the past week, we weren't aware of this. I think the understanding was that the Future of Life Institute was, quote, primarily funded by the Musk Foundation,
which was to the tune of like $10 million, you know, much lower.
$665 million. Mm-hmm. And actually, what I think is really interesting about this is that I remember back in, was it 2021, I think, when Buterin had, you know, the Shiba Inu was kind of, I think it was still popping off at the time, as Nurit calls it, the shitcoin called Shiba Inu. But anyways, he had made news back then because he had burned 90% of his Shiba Inu holdings. And then he had planned to give the remaining 10% to a, quote, not yet decided charity with some values to crypto relief, in parentheses, preventing large scale loss of life, but with a more long-term orientation. And I think what we're seeing now is, it turns out this is where that money went. It went to the Future of Life Institute.
The Future of Life, and Nirit does really good work in looking at where this money goes. And when mm-hmm. she was on the show, she talked about how they're funding fellowships and classes and scholarships and things at major universities, trying to get this gospel of Tezcreal of long-termism out into the world. And it's not just the two people you've mentioned so far. There's also Max Tegmark, who is a co-founder of the so-called Future of Life Institute. He's at MIT. Jan Tallinn, the billionaire Skype co-founder, and other folks are involved in this whole, I would argue, cult-like thing. And it has huge, huge resources as a result to go spread this. And my problem always with this is that media are not doing their homework. The New Yorker did a cover about some of this, I think, two issues ago, and didn't really get into the cultish issues of that. Just kind of said, "Oh, these guys are a little crazy, and they're really interesting and fun." No, they're out there claiming that there's going to be doom from technology, and it's their way to control that technology. And they're getting hearings in Congress, and they're getting hearings at Number 10 Downing, and in Brussels, and in media. And nobody's really, except for Nirit and a few, and Emil Torres, who Jason and I have talked to before, and others, have really talked this through. So I'm glad we're you know, coming back to the story often, and we're going to keep doing it because we got to get some media attention to this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, really, really fantastic work on Nurit's part. Her write up on the AI panic.
It's a very detailed write up.
Very detailed. Yeah, like as I'm reading through it, I'm like, wow, the organization that it takes to really kind of put this timeline together and kind of connect the dots and everything is something that Nurit is very, very good at. So I highly recommend anybody, if you're not subscribed to the AI Panic newsletter, you should be. And if you do, and when you do, you'll see other reports, I'm sure.
And there's a shorter Politico version of it. Yes. The headline is "The Little Known AI Group That Got $660 million." So that gives you kind of the, what do we call it? Cliff Notes version of this.
Yeah. Shiba Inu. Who'd have thunk? Who'd have thought that Shiba Inu would
change the world?
Boiled as it is. Yeah. Where is Shiba Inu now, actually? I'm super curious. This was a total like kind of meme
goof
coin. Yeah. Back in the day here. Sorry, I'm trying to do this on the fly, so I apologize. Well, I think the latest
price today,
it dropped 15%.
April 3. Okay.
Yeah. April 3rd, but it's not giving me.
It's so hard to do the price because the price is 0.00002703.
Right. If you were one of those meme coin investors way back in the day and you didn't get scared by the total like bust or the total drop in value that everything saw like a year, year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and you still held on to things, I don't know. Maybe you've recovered some of that with this, but who'd have thought that, you know, as Nareed put it, a shitcoin like Shiba Inu, and there are many others like it, but this one in particular got a big boost because Elon Musk tweeted it, and that kind of seemed to launch it into another stratosphere within the confines of what it is, which is, you know, seems to be a pretty insignificant crypto coin.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole crypto thing, but I've totally lost any sort of, you know, kind of connection or ongoing kind of interest in seeing where it's headed. And then I looked at the Bitcoin price recently. And I was like, holy moly, like, is it beyond where it was when it was at its peak? If not, it's very close. It's crazy how these things ebb.
The other thing I wish for, and maybe somebody's done this, and if anybody in the audience has seen this, please send it to me, is a family tree of the connections between crypto and AI doomerism.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of overlaps there.
I bet you absolutely there is. And you know, and I think we've mentioned this, but it seems like a lot of the people who were big time pushing, promoting cryptocurrency a handful of years ago, you know, kind of diverted their attention over to AI being the new kind of big exciting thing that has everybody's imaginations going, and where there is that interest and that imagination, there is a lot of money hiding in there as well, a lot of money opportunity if you know how to, air quotes, play the game, which feels like a, you know, a big part of the cryptocurrency game. So anyways, that's a little bit of a divergence from AI, but I think, as you point out, also kind of related. It's just we're starting to see how these relationships actually, you know, come into play. Mm-hmm, and that's a really interesting.
And piece, you know, of I was never fond of the crypto boys, and so they're the last people I would put in charge of the world run by AI.
Sure, sure.
So,
yeah, interesting. Were you fond of Artifact, the social news curation app?
I feel a little guilty. I feel a little guilty, Jason, because Artifact was a neat thing started by folks to do AI and news. And I looked at it one day and I said, oh, this looks nice. Maybe I'll use this. And I forgot about it, completely forgot about it, until the next thing I heard was that they were almost going to shut it down.
Yeah.
And then a week ago said, oh, no, actually, once we got rid of our entire staff, it's not that expensive to keep going. So we'll keep it going for now. And then today there's new news, Jason.
Yeah. Well, essentially, so what happened in this timeline? I mean, this is an app that launched like a year ago, maybe a little bit more than a year ago. And I installed the app and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. Like I'm not entirely seeing the social graph component here yet. Like it took a while for me to kind of see how effective it was at recommending articles that I cared about. I'll be completely honest. Like when I used it, it was hard for me to see immediately the difference between what I got out of using that app versus what I got out of using something like Google News. And so I didn't really use it a lot. Like I tried to use it and tried to use it, and then eventually I stopped trying to use it. And then I think 3 months ago, the founders, who by the way are co-founders of Instagram, Mike Krieger, Kevin Systrom, essentially announced that Artifact was going to be shuttered, that there wasn't, you know, demand, and that there didn't seem to be enough reason to continue the development of the app and the service. All the employees pretty much left the building. And then they started hearing from suitors. And one of those suitors was Yahoo, who ultimately beat out the others and are essentially acquiring Artifact. The technology, obviously, not the employees. They've already
not the app either, really. I mean, they're acquiring the app, but they're not intending to use the app. They're intending to integrate the technology into Yahoo News, which I haven't been. How long has it been since I've been to Yahoo News?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's one of those legacy kind of things. That's like, oh, yeah, it's still kicking. I bet a lot of people use it, though.
It still does.
Yeah, when I go home to visit my mom And, you know, there's always like a short little list of technology things that I need to help her with. You know? it's just my sonly duties to come home and, you know, fix, be IT for my mom when she has them. And one of the things that I often have to do is I have to, you know, kind of like check, take a look at her email, which isn't a primary email. It's not like a Google new or a Gmail or anything like that. It's, you know, some random email service. And when I go to that site to like log in, that's when I see things like Google News or Microsoft, you know, Bing News imported into their kind of interface, and it's all populated and graphical and colorful. But those are the times that I interact with something like a Yahoo News, not necessarily as a destination. And that just makes me think that a lot of people probably do, whether they're going to the Yahoo News site or not, that information is being pulled into other places, you know, in interactive ways.
And people still, I mean, go there. And it was a destination for news, and it's, you know, it's a list of news and okay. And mail and such. So maybe this will improve it. But Yahoo, of course, gained a reputation for killing the babies it bought. Flickr.
Yeah.
You know, it almost died under Yahoo. Other services. And of course, Yahoo's now on its 57th owner since those days. But it's this kind of, to me, it's a zombie of the internet.
Yeah.
Like keeps AOL. Kicking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just and keeps on together. Kicking.
Yep.
They have plans to integrate this like recommendation engine technology into Yahoo News. 185 million readers per month, by the way, with Yahoo News. So, yeah, not insignificant. And Systrom and Krieger, they're going to stay on with Yahoo through the transition as advisors. And then I imagine they're going to bounce. So there you go. Artifact, the app, not continuing.
The
technology continuing.
Investors were made whole. Which is probably the most you could wish for.
Yeah, yeah. This is interesting. How AI intersects with fast food. This is an article that you forwarded to me late last week, and tell me why this caught your attention. I'm curious.
Well, I am a regular, I must admit, Taco Bell customer. The new product, the three cheese flatbread, is pretty good, folks.
Okay,
a little spicy. It's noted. Nice. A little saucy. It's good. So my normal order has been two bean burritos. That's it. I like them. No onions, it's good.
It's a classic. It's old classic.
It is. Yeah. It is. In the old days, I used to love the old enchirito, but they brought it back, kind of ruined it. Anyway. So Taco Bell fascinates me because it was really a junky brand.
Yeah.
And through clever marketing, they made it oddly hip, strangely kind of camp hip and fun. And I remember going to VidCon, and they had really cool T-shirts and other things there. And they're doing fun things on social media and so on. So now we have their head of their chief digital and technology officer at Yum Brands, the parent company, saying they're going to go AI first. So what just fascinates me about this is how.
Yeah.
How? So obviously they're going to use AI to understand demand and time and pricing and so on. Who was it? It was not, what chain was it? Oh, it was Wendy's that said they were going to do variable pricing, higher pricing in prime times. And people
I didn't hear about that.
They went berserk about this. That's ridiculous. And they said, now they're not going to do it.
Okay.
Now, if they just said we might have lower prices in off times to drive demand, people would say, well, cool, great.
Right.
But they were stupid and did the opposite. But I would imagine menu items, pricing, marketing, regional. Fine, AI's in everything now, so it's not that big a deal. But it just amused me, and so we're going to see whether we can get somebody from Taco Bell on the show to talk about this, because maybe there's ways that we just can't imagine that they're doing this now. Obviously, at the same time, as California just enacted its $20 minimum per hour wage scale in fast food restaurants, in large chain restaurants, put it that way. Much talk about how they're going to raise prices, and much talk about how they're going to further reduce staff, but they've already been doing that. If you go to a new McDonald's, not that I go there very often, folks, but I walk by them, you see them pushing you hard to order on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And reduce the counter.
It is interesting when I walk in, you know, I don't go to a lot of fast food, but occasionally we go to Habit. It's my younger daughter's like favorite restaurant. So when she gets to choose, yeah, we go to Habit. Good. And that's actually part of this as well. I think Habit is one of the yum brands. Chipotle is not, I'm sorry to say, Jeff. But you know, you go into some of these restaurants and yeah, the first thing you see is this like row of kiosks of screens. And as a customer, I'm always like, I don't know which one I should do. Like there's someone standing there. Like why not just walk up to them and give my order to them or, you know, do it on the screen. And the more people do it on the screen, what signal does that send to the restaurant that now suddenly they don't need, you know, as many to hire as many people. And I mean, ultimately that's kind of, you know, part of what we're talking about here. Yeah. Joe Park is, like you said, the chief digital and technology officer. And, you know, his vision here is that so many aspects of the fast food industry can benefit from generative AI. You know, they've got an app, a super app for restaurant managers for managing their operations. And it could have a chat bot in there that acts like a coach, says this article in the Wall Street Journal. How should I set this oven temperature is one example. And, you know, this kind of vision that the technology in the restaurant could be interfaced with and could be automated with the use of AI and chatbots in the future. So instead of, so like, I remember back in the day when I got hired at, you know, this restaurant or whatever, and you got the employee manual and you're supposed to read it. And if you need to reference, you know, certain guides to understand the processes of what or whatever. And this just strikes me as like one of those things that LLMs are really good at. It's like feed it a certain specific data set and then query the data set in natural language. And somebody coming into a new role that needs to know how should I set this oven temperature doesn't have to flip through a manual to, or, you know, or bother someone else to figure it out. They just ask and they get the answer. Yeah. And hopefully they get the right answer. That's
right. Well, that's an issue. Right. Yeah. My wife teaches English as a second language and, you know, a couple of her students work in McDonald's and places like that. And you can imagine language would be useful for this as well. But the basic bottom line here, this is a confession. I'm amused by Taco Bell stories. And all you have to do is put out a press release now with an AI in an unexpected place. And I'm a sucker.
And boom, you're going to read it. And you might even take a trip to Taco Bell to pick up a meal to like complete the scene.
I think I need to for research.
Eat it while reading it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. I would forgive you for that. All right. And I did, by the way, I did reach out to Joe on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Who the heck knows if Joe's going to see it and respond. But I'd love to get Joe on and talk about this stuff.
To speculate about what it could do.
Absolutely. I think that would be a really fun conversation. So if anyone watching or listening knows Joe Park.
Or the PR people for Taco Bell, which there are many.
Put in a good word for us. We'd love to have them. All right. We've got some more news. And a little bit later, I'm going to do a quick kind of hands-on with an update to Stability AI's Stability Audio Stability Audio 2.0 music generation, because I came up with some really interesting stuff there. So I'm going to show that off. But we've got more news in a second.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
All right. The information has sources saying that Microsoft and OpenAI are in talks to build a massive supercomputer to the tune of $100 billion. Of course, this is not guaranteed to happen at this point. These are sources saying that this is kind of like percolating at the moment. But if this were to happen, that expense alone would be more than triple of Microsoft's spend last year on servers, buildings, and other equipment.
Wow.
To build this massive supercomputer that they're calling Stargate. They always got to go with the sci-fi names.
Yeah.
You know, kind of tapping into
our imagination. I kind of like that Anthropic named its AI just Claude.
Yeah.
Joe.
I'm Joe. Right. Just talk to Joe. We can trust Joe, right? We can trust Claude. Stargate would power OpenAI's next generation of AI systems. Millions of AI accelerators. Estimates show it would be one of the largest, most advanced data centers in the world. Because we're talking like this would be a massive scale. Several hundred acres. Here's a bunch of language that is sort of Greek to me, but sure sounds like a lot. So I'll just kind of read it verbatim. 5 gigawatts accommodating 40,000 NVIDIA DGX GB200 NVL72 rack systems. You know those.
Wait. And how many rack systems?
40,000 rack systems. 2.88 million Blackwell GPUs within them.
So when I watched the NVIDIA keynote with Jensen Huang, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago now, and I would imagine maybe they were doing this visualization for Microsoft, but they showed all the power of the Blackwell, right? Then there's 2 Blackwells on a board, and then all these boards in a rack, and all these racks in a row, and all these rows, and it showed just going on and on and on and on, and that took my breath away in terms of the computing power, and this is it.
Yeah,
this is what they want to build. But I still haven't seen, and this is always when I quote the Stochastic Parents paper saying that the size doesn't matter, bigger can be worse for all kinds of reasons. What I haven't heard really is, it's going to sound odd, but the use case for such overwhelming compute power, as they say. How is this actually used other than saying, oh, we can, you know, do more cool things with AI.
Yeah.
But do we really need it for a business use case, for a cultural use case? I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll find out.
What exactly does that translate into? Are you building something like this towards a perception that there will be a need for this? Because we're talking 2028. This would be ready to go in 2028. Okay. It's a little ways out. There are some interim steps along the way. It would be done in stages. There would be a smaller scope supercomputer launching in 2026 on the way to full-on Stargate. Yeah, but like, what is the application of this at the end of the day? How does this get put to use? Is it just, oh, we have a really powerful ChatGPT now, you know, and is that even enough 5 years from now, you know, to justify any of this? I mean, I imagine it goes much further than that. But,
you know, as we're talking about this, I'm recalling the fiber bubble that occurred, that there was a huge overbuild of fiber in the country. And that's really what enabled the internet to grow at a lower cost, because it was dark fiber then. It wasn't used. The forecasts before the first crash in 2000 were wrong. There was overinvestment. It had to go somewhere. I wonder whether there's going to be a similar compute bubble and overinvest in computing power where the business isn't really there, but there could be dividends then. Is that, oh, well, hell, you want to get on a supercomputer and do your stupid little thing? Okay, we got capacity.
I mean, we got the supercomputer. We'll put it to use. Yeah, right. Like 3 years from now, if this actually goes into place, 3 years from now, is the landscape as warm, inviting, and welcoming to the existence of these generative AI systems now? You know, now it is. In 3 years from now, as many people have been kind of saying, like, oh, I don't know if the demand's really there. You know, like we've been really hot about this stuff, but maybe we're super overhyped. And in a couple of years, we're going to realize we need to correct around this. And if that's the case, what happens to the Stargates of the world that are in the midst of development? 100 billion
computer. You know, our mutual friend Leo Laporte has been kind of a running joke with Leo and Paris and me on Twig, where Leo was a year and a half ago was, it's a parlor trick. It's not going to go anywhere.
Totally.
And then he took a walk on the beach with somebody. We keep on wondering who it is. Was it Simon Altman? Was it Peter Thiel? Who could it have been? Convinced him that no, this is going to be huge. And there's all kinds of things you can do with it. And so the joke is now that he's a full effective accelerationist.
Okay.
And so that's the
bet around.
That's the bet that's going on, right? Is this a parlor trick, or is this the train you want to be sure to be on?
Yeah,
and we don't know yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. I do remember, producing behind the scenes when Leo would talk about the parlor trick. And I will admit, there were a few times where I was in my office, producing in headphones, saying out loud, I don't agree. I think you're wrong on this, Leo. I think you're right on a lot of things. I think you're wrong on this. And I was kind of, interested to see when he started to come around on that. And, I think that's telling.
Yeah,
so
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll certainly see.
So a huge investment speaks loudly, but can also go bad.
Yeah, indeed.
So we'll see.
You shared with me also this past week an interesting article on Harvard Business Review, how people are really using generative AI. This is a report done by Filter Technologies, who basically mine the web and online communities like Reddit and all these different places, pulling a lot of data to look for patterns in how people are most using generative AI right now. And what stood out to you
What I thought was interesting to talk about, because so it was an interesting methodology that they went and found out what people are talking and saying they're doing with it, which I think bears more than you see all these surveys of CEOs say they're going to use it for this and that. CEOs say they're going to lay off people. So this became a sconch more real. They put it into categories. People using it for technical assistance and troubleshooting, 23%. Content creation and editing, 22%. Personal professional support, those are two very different things, 17%. Learning and education, 15%. Creativity and recreation, which I think is the unsung hero here, 13%. And then research, analysis, and decision-making, 10%.
Yeah.
So that was interesting in itself. And they looked at various, what are people doing, generating ideas, and so on and so forth. When I went down to this huge chart they had, that's what fascinated me, because they have 100 different uses that they identified. And some of them, and this is what I was curious to go through with you, just to pick some out at random. Some are sensible and good, and some are foolhardy. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
So generating ideas. Okay, as long as you're willing to know that this comes from those who had the power to publish all these many years, and it brings biases and limitations. Sure. But if it helps you think better, okay, that's number one.
Kicks off a process of some sort. I know from people I talk to, that's a big part of how they're using it, is generating ideas, kind of a starting point.
Right. I haven't found use for that yet. I've tried in various ways. I haven't used it yet. But number two on the list, I don't think that's by popularity or anything. I could be wrong. But number two on the list is therapy and companionship.
That one doesn't line up for me.
No, it doesn't me either. And it's kind of sad.
I can understand why people might think of these systems in that way. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would call it a sixth sense necessarily or what, but when I know I'm interacting with a computer, it could be telling me the same thing that a human would tell me. But once I know that it's a computer, it's an algorithm, it's an AI and not an actual human, I automatically, it's like that humanity part of it is gone and it means less to me as a result. And I think there's so much of therapy, and especially companionship, at least how I define it, requires the humanity part to know that I'm being heard by another human or having a conversation with another human and we're on the same wavelength, instead of just being informed by data and numbers.
Right. And I defend the internet. I have a book coming out in the fall called The Web We Weave, which defends the freedoms of the internet and the value of the internet, and also examines the problems of the internet. And I tend to mock those, including Jonathan Haidt right now, who say, the phone is taking away our humanity and doing bad things to young people and so on and so forth. Oftentimes, our young people are using the phone to talk to other people, to their friends. They're more friendly with it. Mm-hmm. However, caveat to that, is your internet friends aren't really like your real life friends. They can be fair weather. They can come and go. They can use this in odd ways. Mm-hmm. We haven't really worked out our norms there. So there's a gradation there. But if you find friendship in the machine, Maybe I'm being an old fart. Maybe the movie Her just is disturbing, but I think that's a little worrisome. And I'm not a, Lord knows I'm no moral panicker about this, but I find that a little worrisome.
Yeah. And I mean, and I also realize as we're talking about this, I feel a little hypocritical because it was just a couple of weeks ago that we talked about the doll that had AI in mm-hmm. it that was being a companion for, you know, people who felt very lonely. And I think what it is, what I'm realizing
right,
is
right. that doesn't work for me. Loneliness. Yes.
And maybe there's somewhere down the line where I find myself in that situation and I get it, but for me personally, I don't get it. And I'm not saying that it doesn't work for other people, but it doesn't work.
I couldn't agree more. All right, so let's pick out a few at random there, just to
let's see.
Specific. So I'll go to number three. Specific search. Well, it doesn't work well with search. Now, this is I had an argument with last week with Leo, where he tried to argue it does, and I still think it doesn't. I don't still think that it's not.
I heard that conversation.
Terribly good for that.
Yeah. But I mean, when I think about that, I think about my use of Perplexity, which, you know, kind of the selling point of Perplexity is it's kind of like if you, or at least the way I've been using it is sometimes I would turn to a search engine to make a comparison or to research a comparison between two things. Instead, lately, I've been going to Perplexity and asking, querying it. And so kind of using it like a search engine and coming up with, I think, useful avenues with which to explore the answers in different ways.
It can. I think it's more of that. I think it's more insight and inspiration. Mm-hmm. Fun and nonsense. Number six on this list. Yes, that's what the best use is because you can't be disappointed. That way you can't be disappointed
with
really stupid jokes. But
totally.
You're not going to be led astray in that. If you just say this is a toy, it's fun. What can I do with it? How can I create? That's what I want to see people doing more with. Meeting summaries. A lot of people are using it for that. And when I have not done that because I don't have to go to as many meetings anymore because I'm now emeritus.
Let me just say on that front, if I can real quick, I've been playing with the Galaxy S24 Ultra and it has, you know, Galaxy AI's features. And I had an experience where I recorded a meeting with it to test that feature out. And the summary was almost immediate and it was incredibly helpful. It was like, oh my goodness, that's exactly what I wanted out of this experience. So yeah, in my limited experience with this, and I want to do more with it, it's very useful for that, especially for my like scatterbrain kind of mind, which sometimes like I can have a meeting and if it's not recorded, you know, even though I was fully present there, half of the actual detail is going to be lost on me because it just I can't have a hard time retaining
it. And for a meeting, you know, a business meeting where it's pretty straightforward, I can see that being really useful.
Yeah.
What I wonder about is, you know, having been a denizen of faculty meetings, there's a subtlety that occurs under the surface. Oh, why are they saying that? Oh, why wasn't this raised?
Yeah.
They're agreeing with that. Them? Those two are agreeing? Oh, that's a new alliance, right? And it's never going to pick up on the politics.
Yeah.
And the manipulation that can occur in meetings.
And
so I wonder whether... Right, the intel. Right,
What I was going to say is until we're at the point to where our coworkers are also robots and they're part of the mix,
yes,
and then they can pick up on those relationships,
and that's fine. So we could go on with 100 other. We won't.
I know.
But I just found this. I found this interesting to think Dungeons and Dragons, a safe space to ask questions. Medical advice.
Medical advice, legal research. I mean, these are things that, like, if you're using it, you better be using it with, like, a strong asterisk before and after that is, like, you know, be really
and
careful.
Go to a real doctor. Fact checking. Replying to emails. Okay, but beware. Make sure you read what it sends. Explaining legalese. Well, okay, but don't sign any contracts on the basis.
Yeah.
So I found this a really interesting way to start thinking about how people might use the literate machine that can speak our language. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of keep this chart around as I hear about people using this. And the fact that this came from people's actual usage, I thought it was really good work on the Harvard Business Review's part. And let's see, who's the byline here so we can give credit? Mark Zhao Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really interesting stuff. And actually, when I look at this list of all the ways that it's being used, I'm like, wow, That's a pretty amazing technology that can, you know, do to some degrees, all, you know, a lot of those things, maybe some of them better than others and some of them not well at all. But still, people are finding uses in all these ways for, you know, some of this new stuff. And it, sure, we had bits and pieces and different examples of this prior to the last couple of years, but it really seems like the barrier to entry is lower now.
Yeah,
and absolutely. People are more inclined to experiment with these things and think about them when they're looking for, you know, possibilities or solutions or ideas or whatever.
You know, and the other moral of the story, I think, is that though I think that AGI is BS, we're not going to get artificial general intelligence. We're not going to get machines smart as us. That's the wrong goal. But this is a general machine. Mm-hmm. Looking at this list of 100 things that you can make it do with greater or lesser reliability and quality, it still says, wow, you can ask it to do lots of things because it has this corpus of human speech. And that's still impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Very impressive. Okay. Cool stuff. Yeah. People should definitely check that out. We were talking about law, AI chatbots.
Yeah, on the other hand story. Yeah, now yes, we have this is the good side, and now we're going to go to the bad side.
New York City launched a chatbot last year for giving New Yorkers information about starting a business in the city, managing a business in the city, powered by Microsoft's Azure AI services. Unsurprisingly enough, the chatbot offered incorrect answers. Two things, like, and the article points out as the example, as one of the examples, do I have to accept tenants on rental assistance? In New York City, landlords cannot discriminate by source of income, yet the chatbot reported that no, landlords don't need to accept these tenants, which is very wrong. The city, which is the site,
the city, the site, which is a confusing brand because it's the city, yeah, it's New York, but right. It's thecity.nyc, which my former dean, Sarah Bartlett, helped start to fill the news desert that is New York City, believe it or not.
There we go.
They did this work with a markup.
Yeah. Okay. They did this work with the markup. They have a list of examples there where, and you know, it's not just a couple of things.
Do I have to inform staff about schedule changes? The machine said, no, no specific regulations or requirements that mandate informing staff. The actual answer is, for many workers, particularly in retail fast food, bosses are required to provide significant notice of schedule changes. Can I keep my funeral home pricing confidential? Yeah, says the machine. You can keep it confidential. Federal Trade Commission has outlawed concealing funeral prices.
Yeah, these are...
Can I make my store cashless? Yes, you can make your store cashless in New York City. No, stores have been required to carry cash as payment since 2020. So it's just a case of getting on the train ride to say, aren't we cool? We have a chat bot.
Yeah.
And it's going to do wrong by the people it's meant to serve.
Yeah.
Right. Probably try to, I'm not a fan of the current mayor of New York, Mayor Adams. Many aren't. And I think it was an effort by his administration to look hip and
To stay technical,
and
stay connected to the next thing. And
huge mistake.
Appeal huge to mistake. A certain part of the constituency.
And it's good reporting to go play with it and find out what it's doing right and wrong. In that case, you know, I've objected to other cases where people say, I got it to say a wrong answer. Well, yeah, sure. We know that. Mm-hmm. But in this case where it matters to go find out, I think that it's good reporting.
Yeah, indeed. And I think, you know, just real quick, one other thing they pointed out is that the same question asked by different people would generate different answers if asked enough times. And that's a pretty big kind of critical thing. At least if it was providing the same bad answer, you could go in there potentially. I mean, you know, theoretically speaking, you could go in there and put in a correction for it or something like that. But if it's I don't know what it's doing. What is it interpreting things differently depending on the verbiage of the question, even though it's really about the same
topic? I don't know. One of the mysteries about generative AI is that it does give different answers at different times. Is that because it responds to what people have been asking? Is it right. Is it that random? I don't mean it's not random, but when it makes a decision based on this is the next word, I could have asked the question exactly the same way, but it could also be part of a sequence of questions which could affect what it thinks the next word is, or the way I ask the question could affect what it thinks the next word is. And again, yep. I know think is the wrong verb here, but
right.
Bear with me.
Right.
So that requires some work to see what's different. And in that Meta project we mentioned at the top of the show, one of the questions they asked is whether or not chatbots should be consistent in their answers, which is not an issue that I'd really thought of before, but exactly yeah. this reason.
Totally. Yeah.
How can you test it otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. I think reading through this, again, same as you, it made me realize, oh, that consistency part, that's actually incredibly important. I mean, yeah. you know, again, it goes back to, can you trust what you're using it for? And if it's not consistently giving you answers in either direction, then to a certain degree, it is kind of random, really. And, yep. You know, don't trust randomness. Those two things don't travel
well. Your friends give you plenty of that. You don't need a machine.
That's right. And finally, Intelligencer has an article about a creator named Ariel, who has become a poster child of generative AI and online advertising. She offered just a little bit about her story, her marketing video services online through Fiverr, through Upwork, and a few other different marketplaces. And a French digital marketing company called Arcads reached out to her and asked her if she would take part in an AI tech campaign. She was given a few prompts, asked to, quote, talk as long as you can. They kind of came back and said, can you, you know, talk in different locations and everything? All of this in an effort to kind of like fill up some sort of AI system to create a virtual version of her. And now one of the generated videos has gone viral. She's in a car ranting to her phone and audience about a body odor and deodorant here. And I can show this, but I need to change my settings in order to do this. So give me 1 second and I will share.
I wonder what she was told about the project, what was disclosed and how it could yes. be used. Because it's one of those, it's for a man, I'll say that you go do a model picture and suddenly you end up in an erectile dysfunction ad.
Right.
You'd like to know how it might be used, but you sure. sign away your rights to your image in doing these kinds of things. So I suspect she signed it away. I don't know what the contract said.
Yeah, I wonder how much visibility you have in that. And if that's not part of the contracts that folks like Ariel are signing, it probably should be. Maybe make that abundantly clear. Like, I don't know how she's responding to this. Let me see if this is going to actually play the audio. I hope that you can hear it.
So let me get this straight. You guys are telling me that when you're out of the house for hours, you're comfortable walking around with all that stanky body odor that's been building up on you all day? What's even
this is generated, by the way.
Is that some of you are applying deodorant on top of that odor, which is honestly probably making it worse. Let me tell you what I do. It's a little hygiene
hack. It's pretty convincing looking.
It's pretty convincing. She's a little, her head's a little naughty.
Yeah, I mean, very much like staring into your soul. You know, her eyes are very much like staring deep into your soul.
She's not blinking. They do not have to blink. Not once. Yeah.
And the audio, the more I listen to it, the more it has that kind of, I couldn't even like describe it if I wanted to. It's kind of a glassy, kind of like breathy. I don't know. It kind of... Anyways, it sounds, the more I listen to it, the more it sounds AI. But all things considered, that's pretty darn impressive that you can record something that nailed, you know, that dialed in.
Completely hate is the Lumi lady who convinces women that they smell bad and tries to sell stuff. And now this poor woman was used to become a Lumi lady in essence. I don't know what brand it was. And it's interesting. So, you know, you worry about stock photos, how they could be used. You worry about stock video and how it could be used. Mm-hmm. But now you've got stock identity and how it can be used, which is fascinating and, I mean, technologically cool. And it's not the technology that's the problem. It's how it's used and how people, you know, this is an area where there needs to be regulation. That if you sign your identity to be used, the contract has to be drawn in a way that you have some say over your use of likeness. But again, same thing with stock photos, same thing with stock video.
Totally.
And now, and now it's made up with you saying it.
Yes, exactly. Now it's, yes, is there a difference between the perception of reality and what actually happened when there you are saying these things, and if you truly don't believe what you're saying, yeah, it really comes down to the contract, right? Like if you're doing this sort of work, this is illustrating the need for a contract that is up to date with how these things are being used at this moment and will be used more, because I'm sure this is not the only time we're going to see this sort of thing. Yeah. And I mean, we've heard about this also, you know, in regards to like actors and actresses in Hollywood. And, you know, that was part of the strike that happened months ago. I think that was part of the agreements that they were coming up with, is that you couldn't, you know, there had to be kind of rules and guardrails around how that likeness is used. And
one of the stories we didn't put in the rundown today was that OpenAI says that they have a new generative model that can take a very short period of your own speech and then create more speech. So this has people freaked, especially singers. And singers are out there saying, don't you dare use this in this way. And so we need to have norms and we need to have standards for how things get used.
Yeah. Interesting to see it all develop. Yes. Speaking of things developing, so I saw right before the show that Stability AI, I saw the news anyways. I don't know if it launched, you know, today or a few days ago or whatever, but Stability AI launched Stable Audio 2.0. This is its audio generation model. It used to create 90-second clips, and you had to be a paying member. But right now what they're doing is it now creates up to 3 minutes of music, and you give it the words around the music that you want it to create, and it generates something up to 3 minutes. You get 20 credits per month for free. And I tested a few of these, and you know what I realized in using them is that the generations actually, it takes 2 credits per generation, which I think is a little misleading. Like, it must be a duration thing. I bet if I shortened the length, the duration of the clip, it would use 1 versus 2. But you do also have the ability to upload your own source audio, given that the source audio is copyright free. So they do require that. Sorry, I realized I'm not signed in, so I'm signing in right now, and then I can kind of do a little bit of show and tell here, because I think it's really interesting, and I've got some thoughts and some examples to kind of show it off here. It's trained on data from AudioSparks, has a library of 800,000 audio files. The owners on AudioSparks had the ability to opt out for the training, so that gives you a little bit of a sense of kind of where this kind of comes from. The first clip that I did earlier this morning, let's see here, does it give me so the prompt that I gave it is, the overall vibe should be a fusion of pop punk energy with massive contemporary pop production, anthemic yet modern and groove driven. The different sections should ebb and flow with dynamic changes to keep interest over the 3 minute duration. That's what I asked it to do. Let's see what it came back with. I'll play it and hopefully is there a volume?
You're the musician, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, let's see here. Ooh, that's super poppy.
Oh yeah.
But okay, so you know, and it kind of has little movements and everything like that. I think what's interesting to me where we're at right now with this is that the music AI is starting to get a better sense of structure, because I feel like really early versions of this stuff felt a lot more random. You had these weird, like, kind of discordant sounds paired up with each other, and there was no, you know, there's no like, there might be a 4/4 beat, you know, that we're pretty very used to hearing here in the Western kind of, you know, music landscape, but you wouldn't have like a section that would be dedicated to like a verse and then something that's a little different to a chorus and then come back to the verse again and kind of, you know, revisit the verse. And in my playing around with it, it seems like they're getting better at understanding kind of the structure of music that is trained on anyways. And I do think that that's an advancement. Is this a song that I would listen to? I mean,
no,
it's got kind of a stock music quality to me. See, now we're kind of in kind of a noisier part. It has those movements, and it's, you know, it's not perfect. It's not something that I would choose to listen to on a daily basis, but I do think it's going somewhere. There was another thing that I did, and I was like, okay, well, how does it do with like straight up like electronic music? Because in my mind, electronic music like house and techno and, you know, EDM and all that kind of stuff, it's almost like robotic music in essence, because it was created with electronics, and so much of it is designed around kind of the rigidity of the digital machine. And so maybe that speaks the language a little better. So this is like a techno version, and I'm going to skip a little bit ahead in it. And I mean, you know, I certainly had my days of going dancing and stuff. I would totally hear this on the dance floor. You know what I mean? Okay, so file that little sound that you just heard away. When I heard that little loop here, I'll play it again. Which sound, you know, might sound like noise to a lot of people. But if you like techno and you like electronic music, you know, that might actually sound like something similar to what you listen to. I heard that and I was like, God, I wonder what would happen if I took the product of the machine and I brought it into my own system and, you know, turned it into something that was usable in my mind, you know, as far as like a kind of like a remix sort of thing. And so tell me if this sounds any better. Suddenly we've got the robotic like loop, which is, you know, kind of noisy and random and whatever. And you throw a little bit of the human approach on top of it, which was the drums and the drum loop and everything. It took me like 10 minutes to put together. Like, I would totally base a song around that. So this tools like this, from a creativity standpoint, what we were talking about earlier as far as like, you know, how people are using these tools, this is where like I start to get goose pimples, where I'm like, instead of me searching for hours trying to find a hook that I like, or going onto a music library and finding something that catches my ear, like I could go onto Stability Audio and come up with something that is, I'm going to put it in air quotes, original. Because it's based on something else, but it's based on something else that the end result is something that no one else has. You know, I don't think that you could get this system to create that loop again. I think that's kind of compelling. As a musician, yeah. I find that compelling.
Well, always in these cases, I've said it earlier in today's show, the more this stuff is used as a tool for creativity in our hands, the happier I am. The more benefit we get out of it, the safer it is. Safer is the wrong word, but the more secure we can be in what it does, and we use it. At some point, I hope we can have on a guy named Lev Manovich. I think I mentioned in the past, who does a lot of work. He's at the CUNY Graduate Center on art and AI, and art and technology, and how people use it. And I think that it is just a tool. That's all it is. And when it's used that way, that's really appealing. And I don't think the music's so good. But I'll be curious, as you play with this, Jason, whether with your musical knowledge, how prompting can improve it. Same way as I don't know how to do it I did some funny stuff. I'm giving a talk tomorrow in Washington at the IAPP, which stands for something about privacy professionals. And I asked, I should have sent these images to you, but I'll send them to you for next week. I asked a couple of the generative AIs to come up with the literate machine or the internet that's connected or things like that. And there's some pretty funny images, but I don't know how to instruct it well in the language that people would use around drawing and illustration and art to get what I want. Mm-hmm. And you know that around music. So it'd be interesting to see you really play with this and try to get it to produce something that you really think is good.
Yeah.
As opposed to interesting for a machine.
Yeah, interesting for a machine. I mean, yeah, I mean that little clip, like I could totally, you know, get behind that. I will fully admit though, like, how did I come up with the prompt? I was like, God, where do I even begin with a prompt on this? I went into Perplexity and I said, hey, create me a short prompt separated by commas that is a house music track that has some ethereal, you know, kind of energy and pads. And like, it's like I gave it a starting prompt idea. And then I asked Perplexity to kind of give me a little bit more around that. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a word for this. I know there's a certain word for using an LLM to create a prompt for another LLM. And I can't remember it off the top of my head. And then that is what I fed into Stability, which is a whole other can of worms, where it's like, you know, it's not purely me, but it's me collaborating with the machine to come up with the prompt that informs this other machine to do these things. And I don't know, it's really kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's very, it tickles my need, my desire to be creative in creative ways.
You know? Yeah, and the problem I'm having is that I haven't found the creative uses for me yet. I'm a writer. Mm. And so I write. And I don't know how to use it for that, which I know about. I'm working on a next book, so I've got to find ways to put it in there just to see how it interacts with me and what I can do with it. Similarly, yeah. Notebook LM, which I've talked about a lot from Google, if I had my files, which are all in paper, huge amounts of paper and books and things like that all around,
yeah. Right?
If I had that all digital, then I'd die to have the machine organize it for me and come up with concepts, but it's not.
Yes.
And the amount of work to make it digital, not worth it. So I'm looking for the ways to use this stuff creatively. And the only thing I'm doing is trying to get silly images out, which is fun, but
yeah, fun, useful, potentially.
For PowerPoints. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Google knows this, right? As one example, they've integrated the ability to generate images inside of your docs and stuff like that.
The amazing thing is I've been using ImageF because Google took down Gemini's image making, they still have ImageFX up. And so when I go into ImageFX, I'd say a good half the time it refuses to do the image and says, see the facts and see the rules. And I cannot figure out what I violated. I'm asking things. So I write my next book, or the one coming out this fall, The Web We Weave, about this concept of Fama, which was a mythical beast that was the personification of rumor and reputation and news and so on. So it's a for Virgil's Aeneid, don't worry, I won't go on too long. It's a female beast covered with feathers. Each feather has an eye, an ear, and a mouth, and they never close, and they're always listening, and they're always talking, and this is rumor. And the joke is, this is the internet. And so I wanted to draw, and there's this really weird picture from 1504 of Fama. So I wanted to do a modernized version of Fama connected to the internet. That's all. So I described Fama as this beast that does this and that, that has these characteristics, and I want you to update it to show this connected to the internet. Wouldn't do it. I think connected to the internet, I can't figure out what I was saying wrong. I got it to draw one at one thing? Point. But I think it was that connection to the internet. I finally got something out of it, but there were things I was doing wrong that I could not figure out. And it's not going to tell you because then you're going to game it. So you don't know, but the guardrails are now set up this tight.
Yeah. Yeah. Google's not taking any chances right now. They're very shy at the moment when it comes to their systems. That's interesting. When you were describing that character, you know, my thought was, wow, you're describing exactly what you put into, you know, put in as a prompt. And I'd be curious to see what it comes back with. You know, give me 20 of those and pick the best one.
I'll send you my presentation before next week because we can have some fun with the images.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we have reached the end of this episode of AI Insight. Always a good time and always fun hanging out with you, Jeff. Thank you so much for being here every week. Gutenberg.com. Anything else you want to leave people with?
That's great.
Excellent. I want to show it real quick. If you are watching the video version, you can see that that Jeff has a magazine offered there. Also the Gutenberg
with discount codes. So
that's right.
Always appreciate
25% off.
And the next book coming out is called The Web We Weave, and you can pre-order that too.
Oh, excellent. Is that on here as well?
No, it's not yet. I got
not yet. Not yet. Soon to be, I'm sure.
I have to be nice to my son is what it amounts to.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeff. Always
thank
fun.
Thank you, Jason.
Appreciate you. As for me, just go to yellowgoldstudios.com. That will forward you to the YouTube channel. And you can see right there, if you're watching the video version, it's kind of like Inception. If you're on the YouTube channel watching the live version of the recording of this show, then you'll see the YouTube channel with a little live call out of this episode. All this really means is if you subscribe to the channel at yellowgoldstudios.com, you will get notified if you choose to when we go live. And you can watch us live and you can participate in chat like we have some people today participating in chat. We've got Steve Young, Tay, we've got Daniel, a lot of repeat, Sean, Vinky Poo, all sorts of people participating while we record this live, and we appreciate them being here each and every week, as it turns out. Pretty awesome stuff. We record this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And again, like I said, just find it on YouTube if you want to tune into the live recording, or you can just subscribe by going to AIinside.show and, or just search any of your favorite podcatchers and you will find us. You can also support us directly, as I said earlier in the show, patreon.com/AIinsideshow. That goes directly to us in funding, this show and building it. And we have plans to build it. We want to build it even bigger. So help us do that. Patreon.com/AIinsideshow. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening and supporting us. We appreciate you. And we will see you next time on another episode of AI Inside. Bye, everybody.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run FutureTools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of Lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.